The purpose of a general plan and kind of explain to everybody what that's about. The Utah state law requires municipalities to adopt a general plan. The general plan, sometimes called the comprehensive or master plan, is an advisory policy document that outlines a city's vision for its future. A collection of maps, information, and policies designed to guide the city's future. The general plan describes where a community is, where they want to be, and priorities for how they will get there. The state of Utah requires every county and municipality to have a general plan in order to provide for the health, safety, and welfare of each municipality and its residents. Under state law, public infrastructure cannot be authorized or constructed if it does not conform to the general plan. The law further describes the general plan as an advisory guide to land use decisions. The general plan visions, goals, and strategies guide the city council in enacting land use regulations, ordinances, approving annexations, and pursuing economic development. Comprehensive planning empowers communities to guide progress and change over time. It enables cities to direct how change will occur, such as where new homes or parks will be constructed. Planning is not a cure-all, but helps communities prepare for the future and proactively address changing needs. Planning also allows stakeholders to know what to expect. The general plan outlines a community's vision for the future and describes how that vision will be achieved. Residents, developers, businesses, state government, and other interested parties should be able to see how a community will change by reviewing the general plan. The executive summary that was put together by, and I want to thank him because this has taken a long time, Dr. Lynn England, who is a lecturer in history and political science for Utah Valley University, and has really guided us through the process of putting together this general plan. This is our plan. The residents of Mount Pleasant, Utah. The Mount Pleasant Planning Commission has developed this plan to guide our planning decisions for the coming decade of 2021 to 2031. The plan was prepared after extensive discussions among commission members, hearings and interviews with the city mayors and city council members, and hearings and surveys to hear from residents of Mount Pleasant. We have made an effort to make this a plan that represents the hopes and dreams of the people of our city. One of the most salient features of our preliminary work is that the residents and leaders of Mount Pleasant are generally satisfied with their city, with 45% of the residents rating the city as well above average and 67% rating in above average as a place to live. 90% or more of the residents who responded to the survey rated the city satisfactory or better as a place to raise a family. The quality of rural life, resident friendliness, community spirit, air quality, trash collection, the library, electricity, healthcare, fire protection, law enforcement, schools, youth recreation, parks and playgrounds, emergency preparation, community beautification, water supply, and affordable housing were rated satisfactory or better by over 80%. Only road maintenance failed to be rated satisfactory or better by at least half the residents. When we asked about whether the change, the zoning classifications, the residents were opposed to changes. Discussion with city leaders and staff indicate that areas of concern are road repair, the water supply, affordable housing, employment to keep young people in the town, and possible population growth. There is a strong desire to retain the small town rural character of the town. The usual approach taken by the city when problems have been identified is to acknowledge the problem and seek affordable ways to resolve them. This vision statement was written based on the general level of satisfaction with the city, the problems being confronted, and the efforts to solve the problem. It was written to maintain continuity with Mount Pleasant's heritage and previous plans. It was also written to respond concerns with future population in the city and employment opportunities for young families. The vision statement for the decade 2021 to 2031 was written by members of the Planning Commission and approved by the City Council and supported in the public hearings. It states to provide a healthy, clean, safe environment, to preserve our heritage and traditions as an affordable place to raise a family, to bring more industry and jobs, to keep our families coming back while preserving our rural community, to promote recreational facilities, living conditions, and beautification that will increase our ability to pursue our chosen lifestyles, to plan and prepare our future through responsible economic growth and development in an orderly, sustainable manner. It is important to contextualize the plan in several ways. First, the problems for the next decade are very specific. Targeted and concerned issues such as water, road repair, recreation facilities. In each case, the city is currently involved in efforts to deal with the problem, and this plan is in support of those efforts and builds on them. Second, the city is growing fairly rapidly. Based on the rates used in this plan, the city projected to double in population in about 35 years, though if the higher likely population growth rate is used, it could double in 20 years. Part of the city's planning must cope with this issue. Third, the combination of problems such as scarce water and population growth will require prioritizing and making challenging decisions. Fourth, in dealing with the buffer zone, we need to be more cautious about extending utilities beyond city limits. Fifth, while we grow, we must preserve our small town atmosphere and natural environment around us. Sixth, throughout the history of Mount Pleasant, we have faced many problems. Our response has been to confront the problems with a willingness to explore alternatives, look for innovative approaches, and work as hard as needed. The specific goals to promote the rural community of Mount Pleasant are to bring more light, non-polluting industry and jobs to keep our families living here while preserving our rural community. We encourage moderate population and economic growth that is consistent with the preservation of family connections, friendships, and community. We seek local jobs and training to provide our children the opportunity to remain here and experience a decent standard of living. To support the moderate economic growth consistent with the vision statement, we will encourage the continued development of the industrial park, promote environmentally clean and sustainable businesses such as distribution facilities and high-tech companies, to promote recreational facilities, living conditions, and beautification that will increase the ability to pursue our chosen lifestyles by striving for a cleaner and more organized city through activities such as a Pride Month and volunteer beautification activities. B, expanding and improving our recreational facilities, and continue State Street and Main Street beautification programs. To provide affordable housing in clean, pleasant, and accepting neighborhoods by exploring new forms of housing arrangements, including small homes with common areas and HOAs. To accomplish this, we will promote remedying the infrastructure problems at the Aspen Village and Jackson Trailer Courts. Developing additional affordable housing through the careful locating of duplexes and fourplexes and multiple family complexes. Focusing housing developments through in-building rather than annexation of critical environments surrounding the city. To plan and prepare our future with responsible, orderly population and economic growth and development by making current usage and zoning consistent, enforcing the zoning ordinance and modifying it as needed, improving primary and secondary water systems through the construction of water treatment plant, a new well, and additional storage ponds, promoting water conservation through carefully used and arid land landscaping, improve facilities for public safety and the fire department, to continue as the lead community in historic preservation through the Mormon Pioneer National Heritage Area and the Mount Pleasant Main Street Committee. Finances must be increased through strategic uses of fees, expanded tax base, grants from state and federal agencies, and funds from Mount Pleasant City. To assess the sustainability of all new development proposals, to promote energy conservation through expanded use of LED lighting in city facilities, solar power conservation by residents, to maintain current clean air standards. The Planning Commission, in coordination with Mount Pleasant City Council, will implement this plan by establishing a subcommittee to set priorities for implementation of the plan, especially improvements of the road, water resources, affordable housing, economic development, and planning for population growth. And we encourage any comments or recommendations from anybody tonight.
I don't have any recommendations, but just a comment on how great the job all of you've done. And if it's any consolation, I mean, the first 10-year plan from 1996 from 1996 to 2006. At that time, the only people in the room were Chesley Christensen and myself at the public hearing.
Yes.
My name's Jim Ketchum Caldwell. I'm not new to the area, but my wife and I are, Nancy and I are new to living in Mount Pleasant. We read the 10-year plan, and we're finding that it's really helpful from the standpoint of creating another community. It's an impressive document that covers a lot of different bases, and there were quite a few things that we liked about it. The emphasis on maintaining the character of the community, the emphasis on affordable housing, moderate growth to find jobs for youth, the clean air, energy efficiency, water conservation. We're happy to see that the city is looking to increase the water supplies, and especially in view of like the impact of climate change on that. And we're happy to see the city's going to explore looking at wetlands, sewage treatment as a possible way of both improving water quality and reusing water. So thank you for all the efforts that have been made.
Thank you.
Lastly, we'll be looking for ways to be helpful as we get more familiar with the community.
Thank you.
I maybe had a comment, or maybe a question. Let's say it's a question. So in section 6, it talks about annexation elements. And I might ask the zoning committee if it says there are no plans to annex additional lands to the city, we will fill the city vacant areas before additional annexations. As a city, and this might be, maybe this is one of those statements that may or may not be a little bit outdated in the aspect that as we move forward as a city, is it proper to annex areas of growth after the fact or before that starts, the growth starts? We're already facing, and you know, I'm pleased to, as you talked about all those areas of,
right,
that need attention. We have a tremendous culinary water project just beginning, and same thing on the irrigation, and we've had several road projects, which roads seem to be the number one concern. So I think we're headed the right direction, but I do have a question. As we move forward, and you talk to anybody that's looking to build or whatnot within our city limits, they're very limited available lots.
Right.
And so what's happening is people are starting to move out. And you mentioned that we got to be really careful about providing services for people on the outlying areas. Which, you know, it's been a tradition for us to provide power,
right,
where possible, even water and sewer. But I feel like that we need some direction on this annexation, and maybe some direction from the Planning Commission as far as what their suggestions might be as we are faced with some of those
right,
circumstances.
I agree with that. You know, if we look at our population, you know, going to double within 20 years, sure, we're going to have to look towards, you know, providing the
as I think about your comments and what we've discussed and what we've written in the plan, let me back up. On my wife's Facebook account the other night, someone was trying to sell a quarter acre lot in Mount Pleasant for $50,000. Okay, so my first thought on seeing that was, is that's a quarter acre lot, that's a small lot, small home, and if my kids were to want to come live in Mount Pleasant and build, they probably couldn't start there. So we have affordability problem, we have no inventory in the city that I know on. On MLS, there is no inventory in Mount Pleasant.
No, it's, we have people stop by my office every day looking for...
For a lot.
Yeah, and we're house poor, you know.
From my sense, that it's, because as I think about it, on every direction of the city, I know someone that wants to annex and build a subdivision.
Right.
Right? And I know we have water coming, both culinary and irrigation, but as it sits right now, we don't. Am I saying that wrong? We
yeah.
do not have the ability to serve.
We don't.
Right.
Currently today, so we're dealing with the future. My other thought is, and I just think in economic terms, the biggest problem I see with these growth areas are the standards that we're going to require to be built. A fully improved road, curb gutter sidewalk, sewer, culinary water, secondary water, power, underground, and natural gas and foam. And it takes a lot of money to build that. I mean, it's having been in development before, the horsepower required to make that happen is big. And it's just, I just think of that quarter of town up there when I think the subdivisions of Mount Pleasant. We can't have that.
Well, and I think probably every one of us would agree, and that's probably what's going to help us stay somewhat rural.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, the fact
yeah.
we don't have, I mentioned these water projects and everything are just getting off the ground, really. But can we make commitments right now? No, we can't.
No.
Not for any.
No.
I mean, these onesie-twosies, we've been able to probably let them in. But I think before we open it up to some major development, it needs some serious consideration.
Yes. Yeah.
And hit the nail on the head, this community cannot afford to annex property and then start putting roads and all that infrastructure that you just mentioned. That's going to have to be up to the developer.
And Justin Atkinson's on Zoom, and he messaged me. He said we probably should pull up the annexation ordinance that we have and maybe be looking at it right now too, because it's been quite some time since it's been updated in conjunction with the general plan.
That developer's coming. I mean,
they're coming.
They're going to be here.
Right.
So.
So my experience with developing is the guy that makes the biggest mistake in making an offer gets the development. And then he comes in here and he's trying to get a project moved forward with the least amount of money possible. And it's always this clash, right? It's always this friction. Because we're saying we want this and he wants to pay for something else.
Right.
Because it just takes a ton of horsepower money to make that happen.
Well, I just, I think as the city and the planning commission moves forward, and if we can establish those, and there probably are existing ordinances that we can allow them to govern us by, but I think we need to be careful, and we need to,
yes.
as these annexations are presented,
yeah.
we have to be prepared to explain just what you just did, the process that they're going to have to go through.
Yeah.
So, as I listened to what you said, somebody would have to come in with a master plan, which would include all of the roads and sidewalks and the water, sewer, power, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then, once they come up with a legitimate plan and are prepared to have the money, put up the money to accomplish that project, then we could entertain the annexation. But only after we have sufficient water and, I think water is probably the main thing that's going to hold us back right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we, an example, we had a young couple come in planning and zoning a while back that had ideas about this northeast part of town that's for sale, that sagebrush area.
Right.
Around the Brothersons. And the immediate first, one of the first things we thought of was,
yeah,
if we were just to build on the existing subdivision, expand to the east, we're, we only have one access into that whole area. There should be two. But the money it would take, and I measured it one time, it was 1,350 feet from the one intersection, the eastern edge of that subdivision, up to 900 east. That's a big chunk of road to build just to provide two accesses to a subdivision. And honestly, from a development point of view, you know, developers are time value of money. They look at a return based on time. And when you only sell 4, 5, 6 lots a year and you have to build a relative that would accommodate 20 lots, you know, it's tough. It makes it really hard.
Right.
So.
But that's what they're up against.
That's what they're up against.
It's happening, you know, it's happening all around us.
Yeah.
That they've obviously got the resources to accommodate it. We don't right now. But once those resources, if they're secured, then we need to be thinking, we have to have a plan in place to be able to accommodate it when we do have the resources.
Well, we're not the only ones up against resources either. Talking to another public works director today, they're looking at punching another well in a nearby community because they're short on water as well.
Yeah. I think we can look to Nephi as what is a good example of what we're going to be faced with here soon. You know, on a little 4-acre lot, Nephi is well over $100,000.
Wow. Yeah, the prices are going up. But we can't, until we get, and we have explained that, we explained that to that couple, that they would have to put roads, they would have to do all of the water, sewer, you know, all of these, everything had to, you know, and then they start adding up the dollars and it kind of, it gets a little discouraging for them.
It's hard to have to break that news.
Yeah,
to people,
yeah.
We deal with it monthly, mm-hmm, on a council level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, they've got this space and they got this potential, but when they learn they've got to build roads and put all that in,
right?
It's a lot of money, but
we don't
have the resources, right, to put it in.
Right.
One thing, we don't have the water supply to provide it once we get put in. I'd just like to say I really appreciate what you do as a planning commission.
Thank you.
It reinforces, it gives us a place to go. Mm-hmm. People have these questions and they can get good answers.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got new ones on there and whatnot. I just appreciate you. It takes a lot of time, and this is something that Mount Pleasant, we haven't had to deal with growth before, and it's coming fast.
Yeah.
I was driving back from Tampa World War II last weekend, and I was driving down, across down 7th South, and then across 600 East, and then I went up my road. Then I went up 900 east out. I was heading out to Skyline Mountain Resort. And I counted the houses that were new since I moved in here in 2001. and there were over 100.
Oh, yeah.
Just in my line of sight, driving on that road. 100. I couldn't believe it.
So it's 112?
Well, no, houses in Mount Pleasant. In my mind, I'm saying, well, that one's built after mine, that one's built after mine.
Right, oh, right.
See what I'm saying?
I thought you were talking about the outskirts.
No, I was talking about one little road in town.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, I could see two or three blocks down, but yeah, it was a lot of...
Well, 5 years ago, we weren't seeing that kind of growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Consequently, it just comes so gradual, and 5 years ago, we were okay on water. But now that situation has changed.
Yeah.
Well, and people are commuting. It's no biggie to commute just to get away from the bigger cities. But yeah, it's we're running out of building lots, and we're definitely running out of houses. We have way too many buyers that want to buy, and we don't have the inventory.
I just want to make a comment on the culinary water project. A lot of folks might not know what the time frame is.
Mm-hmm.
And optimistically, we're looking to have that water available in 20 months. 20 months. So,
yeah.
That gives folks an idea of what, you know, is in the works.
Yeah.
That we should have at the treatment plant and the new well, providing more water to our system in that time frame. So.
And that brings us up to what? A normal capacity or above with it?
Well, we haven't drilled the test well yet, but it's hard to say what kind of water we're going to have until we drill a couple wells, but we're hoping to really be able to provide enough water for current population and for growth.
With the treatment plan alone, we would still be short a little bit.
Okay.
You know, we've talked as a commission, planning commission, that we know that there are no new irrigation connections available. So as you issue a building permit to a house that doesn't have irrigation, it means they're using culinary. And granted, our rates reflect that, but when it tips the balance in town, or most of town's on irrigated water for irrigation water, I said that wrong, you know, secondary water irrigation, as we build more houses with just a culinary connection, you know, the demand on that culinary system is going to go up to the roof. And I know it's built into the models. I'm not saying it's not, but it's still a big deal. Heaven forbid we get a big industrial user that wants to use a lot of water.
I know. That wouldn't be good.
I was thinking about the green polka dot thing or something like that, you know.
Well, I have told them all that I'd like to bring up. To me, I think we're looking at 2 years, 3 years down the road before we can facilitate a lot of growth.
Yeah.
Because we've got to have the irrigation system going, the secondary water.
Yeah.
So that we don't drain all our culinary waters. And so that's something we need to look at as a city also. You know, it's not just talking about the culinary water. We've got to have that secondary water to take care of so that we're not using that culinary water. We can use it for household.
Yeah.
And so the irrigation system's out further than the culinary system is. So, you know, it's hard to say when we will be able to facilitate the growth that we're looking at. But I mean, it's going to have to be handled very carefully.
You're probably not far off when you say 3 years.
Yeah, that's why I say 3 years at least.
Yeah.
And well, I thought about it, and that's what I thought. We're 3 years out before we can probably open up, per se, and, you know, talk about annexation and everything else. But we got a lot of things in front of us before we get to that point, and so we need to be ready when it does come.
Well, here's an interesting thought. I was thinking back to my development days. Let's say a 40, 50 lot subdivision added 100 to 200,000 square feet of asphalt to the public works maintenance schedule. And as we know, you need to, every 5 years or so, you do a chip seal or whatever to maintain your road. It's really bad when you add another 200,000 square feet of asphalt to take care of when we struggle to take care of our existing, you know what I mean? It's a big subject.
Yes, it is.
You know, a lot of the development isn't a bad thing. I think they're great, but there's just a big deal that comes with that. A burden. It's almost a burden, almost. So.
Well, if we start taking on a lot more curb and gutter with sidewalks, we're going to run into stormwater also, that we're going to have to do something with.
Stormwater is like the unspoken thing we don't talk about in Mount Pleasant. It doesn't rain here that much.
It's amazing. It's almost a problem I wish we had right now.
Yeah.
You know, those floods we used to get in the 50s and that, you know, I remember the pictures of the big flood on the 24th, and, you know, in heavy rainstorms, I watch my road, I watch that water start at my house, and it ends up at David's house, you know, on a big storm.
I had one of the old timers tell me we're 2 years out before this weather switches over to where we'll get that 84, 85 snowfall and that moisture. Yeah, they've been around for a long time and watched the cycle, and they've kept track of it. That's what they're saying.
It'll be a long 2 years.
Yeah, I think it is. That's what he's talking about. He said, we're in for a long 2 years. If this goes like it's going right now, there's probably no reason to turn the irrigation system on this fall, or this spring, if this is all we're going to have.
Yeah. We're getting it this weekend.
Okay.
Right.
Yes, we are coming.
Well, I hope we get about 5 or 6 more feet on the mountain.
Me too.
Because it's pretty thin up there right now. It's right up there.
Mm-hmm.
The water content's even worse.
Yeah, it is.
It's a dry, dry snow. We gotta be positive, you never know. Part of it, that's what they live off that. You know, being positive, plant the crops and let's go. But that's just my idea, that's what we're faced with, at least 3 years before we can.
In those 3 years, the population projection would say you take 250 to 300 people moving in.
Well, the last thing people want to do is put moratoriums and that sort of thing on it. But it's a reality we may have to face.
Yeah.
It really is. If these projects don't develop, test flows don't pan out, We just got to hope that we can pull things together so that we don't have to impose those kinds of things.
Yeah.
We know if we have the resources that growth would come right now. But without those resources, I don't think we can make many commitments to make projects.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what we've. You know, you hate to say that to people, but we just don't have the water. We don't have the infrastructure to do that. So
you mentioned the treatment plant. The treatment plant can treat water that's coming down the stream, which right now is going to irrigation. So that would be a big plus, right? The treatment plant.
Yeah.
But that would really, all that would do is just satisfy our immediate need right now.
We'd still be a little bit short.
With what?
We would still be short.
Right. That's,
It's Fort Knox, this irrigation water project is going to give us a bigger water storage facility, but we still count on Pleasant Creek to fill that storage facility.
Right.
Even though we have this updated irrigation system, we still rely on a good winter to fill that up, so. And Pleasant Creek's Pleasant Creek, it's not going to change.
Yeah.
But it will enable us to capture more of that water to last, you know, further into the summer.
If we get the Cox's Creek change. You know, if we don't get that Cox's Creek change, then we can't. We're only allowed so much water, we're going to let the rest of it go. So it's, there's a lot of stuff going on.
We gotta hope the state can wake up and amend a lot of the decrees that have kept it from happening.
I hope so.
There is just, it's a no-brainer that we've got to store what we've got and make the use of what we've got. And they've, so far, they've not done one thing to do anything about it. You can only slow the flow so many times.
Is there any way of putting stipulations on grass size or anything on new building to help ease the burden?
Yeah, we talked about that. And we've talked about, you know, trying to, any of the new build that's going on, dryscaping or, you know, arid landscaping. But never put any kind of enforcement on it, but just to encourage it.
And there is other options besides size and grass. You need different types of grass. Kentucky bluegrass is one of the worst water suckers there is.
Uh-huh.
There is better grasses out there that take a third of the less water.
What's nice, we have an expert right there.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as even just changing the grass type.
Right.
It's significant favors.
Yeah, but that cultural shift hasn't happened yet.
No.
And I don't know how we, you know, the change agent necessary to create that cultural shift. We've got to keep running out of water.
You know,
unfortunately, but that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So when I was working with the city, I feel like the grass that we were using with that, and for new building, we were, you know, given the first bag to use to get more of that, let them try it, and then they'd see the difference. And a lot of people like it, and it was a lot better grass, and it was a lot, it took better, and around here it took a lot less water.
That's what we planted on the new cemetery piece that they're playing soccer on.
So it's a much better grass.
It's a better blend.
Drought resistant grass.
Is that on the soccer field planted, Matt?
Yeah. And we're going to do the same thing on the cemetery expansion this spring on B section. We'll use that grass seed again.
Yeah. So it's noticeably better, huh?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
You know, part of that cultural shift, it's an education process. It's, you know, for so long the idea that, you know, and it's among all of us, it's why the water's there, I'm going to use it because I know it's going to run out. And I think that, you know, having a more arid grass is great, but if people don't understand exactly how much water it requires, they're still going to keep putting the same amount of water on it. So it's really kind of a multifaceted problem that needs to be attacked from different angles to really make an impact. But it starts with usage, for sure, getting the right mess in.
Absolutely. Well, folks do not want to let their lawns die. I mean, they are willing to hold on to the bitter end. And they are not going to let their lawn die. So we talk a lot about, as a council, and ordinance enforcement, and that's a priority with this. You know, we need to hold people accountable when they're in violation of water restrictions. because that is a problem, and that's something we're committed to.
Is it possible, we know that sprinkling systems on yards saves a ton of water. Is it possible to enforce a rule, a regulation, or a law requiring sprinkling systems, particularly on new developments or whatnot, or maybe even on our existing homeowners, our existing? It would be possible even to encourage it. I'm not saying it'd have to be mandatory, but encourage it by maybe offering, we got a banker here offering finance programs at a low interest rate, or some of those type of things where we could encourage our people as this new system comes on board to install sprinkling systems on their yard so that they could monitor. And by doing that, and they know they're going to have meters on their irrigation system, so it makes sense to me to provide an avenue so people could put sprinkling systems into their homes.
Central Utah Water Conservancy actually offers rebates, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you'll put in a sprinkler system with a smart controller,
right,
they offer money to help assist people with that.
Yeah. Well, and I think the metering system is going to alleviate a lot of abuse when people start getting their bills.
Yeah. Well, some people will. Other people don't care. They'll pay it.
Pay it, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the majority might think twice before they...
Like the fines for the lots and things that we divvy up. It's no good or not.
Yeah.
They just pay the fine and let the junk stay there.
Yeah.
So that's what we're faced with as a council. We got a lot of things that we got to get done in that area. I was just telling the mayor there, I wonder how many people we got living in this community in trailers in adjacent lots or adjacent to lots. Did all this.
I know.
They're not hooked into the sewer system.
Yeah.
We've just got so many things to face in this community that it's a daunting task. What it is. But we got to work up to it.
Yeah.
Now, I just had a thought, I think enforcement's important, and I think it's important to have an ordinance that says this is what we do. But on the other hand, I had the thought while everybody was talking that many, many people, when they learn that they're required to do something, just want to do it just because. I think that's actually a bigger majority than the people that won't do it because it's an ordinance. And I just thought about what Coulter said about Central Utah Water, is they have places you go and they have those little garden things, that show you what you can do. Well, we have that here with Wasatch. I could actually go right here in town and learn how to do that. It's just there's no connection that someone out there can connect with it. You know what I mean? I would like to use less water. I feel responsibility, a moral responsibility to use less water. And but I guess at the end of the day, how do you do it? I'm a ditch digger. I do sewer lines. Believe it or not, sprinklers and me don't get along. I rip them out of the ground. I don't put them in the ground. So it's intimidating for me to plan a drip system for my flower bed. You know what I mean? Honestly. I've got the little drip things in my garage for 10 years. It's a little bought at Home Depot. I've never done it. Because I don't know how.
They'll come help us. They'll help people plan sprinkler systems. I know they work with Bridger on different grasses and different things. And they're willing to come up. If we could put a class together for the community, they're willing to come.
So maybe we sponsor, maybe we drive that,
So I'm putting a sprinkler system in. It's already dug, but it's not hooked up. It will this spring. how do I get that credit? I'm just, is it because, you know, I'm, that's what I purposely...
Can you go to the Utah Water Conservancy website?
Okay.
You'll be able to find it on the comment.
And is there a device you put on your system to...
It's a smart control, so are you doing secondary or culinary?
I'm doing secondary, yeah.
So it should play either.
Yeah.
But it actually shows you what devices you have to have to get the credit.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
So there's a lot of good news out there that we just need to get out to the public.
Yeah.
Water, light, mix it in.
Think about those smart controllers that are, they're only as smart as the person operating them, and that's the problem.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah, me too.
No, I guess I shouldn't say smart. If you're ignorant, and I don't mean ignorant in trying to get away with something, but just not knowing,
yeah,
then it doesn't do you a lot of good, so.
Okay.
I just, Walden's made a comment about the watering at nighttime making a big difference. Is there a reason why we can no longer apply for permission to set our timers to water at nighttime instead of in the daytime?
It's enforcement.
Okay. So just, there's no way to see who's cheating on it? Is that the reason? Or are they doing that now anyway?
Well, that's bad when we get these beers. To really get these meters, that would change.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would change there. But that is a fact. If you water between midnight and 6 in the morning, if everybody did that, we would save a lot of water.
Yeah, I used to do that.
Yeah. But without the ability to enforce, people take their holes and lay down on the lawn and let it run all night. And, I mean, they literally have to turn the water off at times. Because they'll go look at the meter and that meter is just buzzing. And it's way after hours. So that's what we're faced with.
And if we can encourage everybody to look, like Richard said, at how much that grass actually needs, not what we think it needs.
Right.
But what it actually needs, and kind of go by look at it. I think we can help slow the flow a bunch, as long as everybody we can get a community on board of trying. But also, Bridger said, people just, the water's on, dang, I'm going to use it because it's my turn.
I'm going to say something crazy. Can't we have a city guy that's trained in that?
Yeah, oh, I don't want to say it.
Behind the policeman and the... I just think it's crazy.
No, it would be awesome.
Yeah.
The general consensus in the spring around here is if we don't use it, Delta will.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing we don't use goes down into that creek, goes down in Delta, so Delta gets it. And so it's still the old farmer mentality, you know. There's been a lot of fights and worse over why.
Better yet, Delta impounds it and uses it later.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, we was building temples, they was building ponds.
So the timelines you gave earlier, where you said 24 months for culinary and at least 3 years for secondary, is that the timing on when we will have the meters?
Apparently, yes. We're just hopeful. That's just, you know, a guess. We're still in preliminary parts with the secondary. They're still doing...
They have a meeting this week to go over a bunch of stuff with them. Yeah. Next week. We'll know a little bit more.
Because, I mean, your meters are going to change everything.
Oh, it'll make a difference on the secondary water for sure, yeah.
Because...
It'll help our culinary water.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You watch people's driving habits when gas is $4 a gallon compared to when it's $2 a gallon. They change.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you'll always have someone with an unlimited checkbook, but that's the very small minority in this town. When the average income and the average person, you know, you're going to find they don't have their open hoses running when they're metered. They won't do it.
But adding that much more meters is going to add that much more work to public works as well. maintaining and reading and...
What the land did with their irrigation system back in the day when they did their new one?
Yeah.
Is they posted the usage in a public forum. Anybody could go up and look at anybody's usage on a... And granted, it was mostly ag usage versus the town.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be a little...
It was all available, yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, that's a real thing too.
Yeah.
It feels like a lot of times whenever we talk about people using too much water, we always point the finger at the residents. But if you really dig in to see who uses the most water, it's like over in Nephi, when they keep selling this property to developers and everybody's saying, oh, where are they going to get their water? They're getting their water because they don't have to farm all those acres anymore.
That's right.
So those households are not using as much as the farmers are.
Right.
So I guess when we're metered, will the farmers also be metered?
It won't matter. We'll be on a whole separate system from the farmers. We'll have our water up above town and the farmers will have their pond.
The water will be split on where, and our percentage will go in our pond and their percentage will go in their pond.
Okay.
And if they're out, they're not getting ours. That's ours.
And vice versa.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hope is that we avoid that. They're using more than they should and we're using more.
It'll be set according to shares, and that's why it's so crucial that we get all the lots in town that still has water shares in the city side.
How many are there like that, Mike? You know?
Quite a few.
Is there a list out there somewhere?
Yeah. The irrigation company has it.
Okay.
You know, it's just not surface water we're getting in trouble with. Our aquifers.
They're drying too.
You talk to the farmers. I know one down there had to go down 80 feet in the last couple of years just to get the same water into his well. So, you know, the aquifers are drying up too, so it's serious.
And that is a real concern because we're seeing a lot of development east of town.
Yeah.
All that development on the hills in the same aquifer.
Yeah.
We all draw the same water source. Yes. To draw us anything. My part. And there you go.
And the number of septic systems that you,
yeah.
You wonder at what point do all the septic systems start affecting the aquifers and the water wells
right.
For everybody downstream.
But maybe I'll answer a question you asked earlier, David. The completion date, the time frames we have on this culinary water approval project, they're projected finished with the May of 2022. So... give or take,
yes.
A couple of months. But
any other questions or suggestions? Shall we call this meeting to a close? We'll adjourn it. Yeah.
There we go.